This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. And from Nashville, Tennessee, I'm your host, Gary Holt. Joining me in Missouri is Tina Mae Weber, our co-host. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Gary. It's hot outside. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. I'm sitting in front of the air conditioning and the fan, and it's just comfortable right now. But we do have a hot show. And we've got some great guests, and tell us who we have joining us today for Saddle Up America.
Well, today we get cooking. We have C.W. Butch Welch, Dutch oven cook from Idaho. Then we travel to Nemo, South Dakota, and talk with Doug Lindgren, owner of Hay Creek Ranch.
All right, so it is going to be a fun show, and if you're back here in the Southeast, if you were doing any Dutch oven cooking today, you'd be kind of cooking on high. So warm weather back here. Hope everybody stays safe. Take care of your livestock. But it is going to be a fun show. We want to remind folks that the Saddle Up America program is made possible by our great sponsors at the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the Western and equestrian lifestyle in the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net, and by Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. You can shop with Trailhead Supply online at trailheadsupply.com, and by TrailGuard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. Founded with one mission in mind, TrailGuard guards you down life's trails. You can learn more about them today at trailguard.org. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Butch Welch. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Out yonder where the prairie winds blow, from the Rio Grande up to old Idaho, there's a sound comes winging from over the plain. It's the cowboys a-singing the songs of the range. I want to be there when they ride into town. Can't get enough of that great western sound. It's the best of the west. Come along with me to the cowboy jubilee.
Let the fiddle play your bow with sweet melody.
Hear the cowboys answer with their ho-il-o-dee.
That bunkhouse bass never loses the beat.
The cowboys start to clapping and they kick up their feet. I pick a prairie flower and I ask her to dance. Once around the floor and it must be romance. The prairie moon is shining for her and for me at the cowboy jubilee. I want to be there when they ride into town. Can't get enough of that great western sound. It's the best of the west. I'm sure you'll agree. At the cowboy jubilee. At the cowboy jubilee.
Well, that's a little Riders in the Sky to get things kicked off today. And I've kind of got my cowboy mood going. And we're going to talk to a real guy that spent a lot of time back out on the trails and has grown up in the great state of Idaho. And we're going to welcome right now C.W. Butch Welch to the show. Butch, welcome.
Well, Gary, it's great to be here.
Good morning, Butch.
Good morning, Tina Mae.
Hey, you know, we visited just a little bit yesterday, and you have done so many stinking things, it's almost hard to decide where to start. Such a interesting and varied life, but I guess the best way to start is to start at the beginning. And tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you got involved with horses and outfitting and cooking, and we'll just let you kind of pick up from the beginning with us.
Well, I was born and raised in southeast Idaho, and Pretty rural background. We raised our own beef, chickens, all of that. And I kind of got into cooking from an early age. My dad had been an Army cook, and so he was a pretty good role model, and went to college, got a degree in wildlife management, and for a number of years I worked on various research projects around the West. Interspersed with that, I spent a season on a dude ranch in central Idaho, and time in Yellowstone Park trapping grizzly bears for a research project. And you know, I don't care where you go, what you do, you have to eat. And if you like to eat good, you know, that is a big part of it for me. And the reason to be, I think, a good camp cook is you control your own destiny. You only have to go camping with somebody who isn't a good camp cook one or two times, and you decide maybe it's time you learn some of these skills. So it's just been kind of a long journey, and I have done a lot of things, and so my job really is to share that with other people and give them a window into some of the things I've personally been able to experience.
Well, you've got such a varied, varied background. When you talked the other day about tracking grizzly down, I just had to find out a little bit more about that. Tell us about what it's like to track grizzly, and where were you doing that?
I was on the interagency grizzly bear study team, and so this was essentially the Yellowstone ecosystem, Yellowstone Park and the adjoining areas of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And basically what we were doing was we were trapping bears both in culvert traps and with foot snares, and outfitting them with a radio collar, ear tagging them, pulling a tooth out of them for aging, just gathering scientific data, and then following those bears, you know, how big of home range, and just all sorts of data we were able to collect. We did a lot of flying, tracked them with their radio collars, and so it was a six-month summer gig, April through October, for 75, 76, 77, and got to see some country that, you know, most people don't. The backcountry of Yellowstone, everybody sees the roads, the geysers, but not as many people get out to do what we do and to get to see and deal with such a critter as a grizzly bear.
Wow, wow. Well, did you ever have any close calls while you were out there doing that?
We had a couple of close calls, and, you know, it's you're dealing with such an unknown, and then you get a grizzly bear under the influence of drugs when they come out. That's kind of a time you have to be there to monitor them, but you also want to be safe. So I learned how to climb trees pretty good.
Oh, gosh. Well, now, I think you said that when you were doing that, you didn't do a lot of cooking while you were out there, but you did do quite a bit when you were outfitting. Can you tell us a little bit about your time doing that?
When I went to work for this outfit up in central Idaho, we were horse packing guests into high mountain lakes and and to go out and photograph wildlife, deer, elk, bighorn sheep. And one of the things in the outfitting business is the food. And I don't care if it's a summer outfitter like we were, a big game outfitter, or a river outfitter. When people end their day, they're sitting down eating, and the better the food, the better the review, and in my case, the bigger the tip, and repeat business for the owner. So it's just good food is the frosting on a cake for a good day outdoors for me.
Yeah. Well, I think somebody told me one today. They asked me who I thought was the most important person in the backcountry or on a cattle drive, and the answer was the cook. So, you know, if the cook ain't happy, nobody's happy. Just a little play
Absolutely.
On words there. Yeah, just a
Sorry. Going back to those cattle drive days, the cookie was the number two man on the payroll. Only the trail boss got paid more than him, because if the cowboys aren't eating good, they quit, then there's somebody halfway to Abilene with a herd of cows. So, yeah, the cooking and eating are pretty important.
They're pretty important today, not just back then, but today, too. Today, too. Well, when did you start your Dutch oven cooking? When did that come into play? And how did that come about?
Well, one of my old Dutch ovens was a wedding gift to my parents in 1946. So I've been first eating out of that and then cooking out of it for many years. And I probably came of age as a Dutch oven cook when I hired on as a game warden for the state of Idaho in 1978, and I was assigned, my one patrol area was a big chunk of the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness area. And so when you're back there horseback or foot, or sometimes flying in or staying at patrol cabins, you kind of go back to that supper time every day, and that's the meal. And so a bunch of guys I used to boat with that we called our raft trips Float and Bloat. It was kind of a cooking contest. And so it was just, you know, always trying to do something a little new, a little different, but in the end, make people happy.
Yeah. Now, I've got to ask this question. Is the type of cookware you use important in Dutch oven cooking?
Oh, absolutely. You know, our Dutch ovens have been around really since colonial days. We know that. They were a staple for really up until probably the early, say, the World War II. There was a lot of people out here in the West still used them and have kept those traditions alive. And it's like anything else. I don't care what you do. Good equipment translates to better results. And, you know, over the years, now the big new thing, well, not big new, it's 50 years old, are aluminum Dutch ovens, which is what I used for my horse packing for the weight savings. I went to aluminum, which, you know, on a horse pack, that saves me about 15 pounds of weight, an aluminum oven versus an iron oven.
Yeah. Well, I hadn't thought about the aluminum ovens. I'm so used to seeing people use the cast iron. Do you have a preference? I mean, if you're going to pick one or the other, would you use cast iron?
Well, the way I put it, Gary, is if I'm loading them on the back of my Ford F-350 four-wheel drive, I like aluminum. They're easier to lift. If I'm sitting on the back porch, I like my iron.
Okay.
They both cook equally as well, but you know, as your hair turns white and you get a little long in the tooth, those lighter ovens, I find myself grabbing them more and more.
Yeah.
I got a question. Can you tell the difference in the taste? Because I know in those old cast iron, you know, that iron, you know, gets cooked into the food. So is there a difference in the taste between the aluminum and the cast iron, which I'm sure there's a difference in cooking it, too?
You know, Tina May, I do not have a wine taster's palate, which, you know, I can detect hints of raspberry in some wine. I think there is a little bit of a difference. Now, the aluminum ovens I use are hard anodized, so you're not getting any aluminum off of them like we did with the first generation of aluminum ovens. But I think there's a little bit of a taste difference between the two.
Okay, that's interesting. I never heard of the aluminum cooking. That's interesting. And I don't blame you either. Those cast iron, they're hot. They're heavy.
Oh yeah.
Well, they are kind of heavy, and but people, I think, still like the cast iron. It seems like that the Dutch oven cooking is just taking a revival, just like the chuck wagon cooking is right now, and mighty, mighty, mighty fine eating. But you know, I think it's like everything else. You can have some good equipment, but you have to know how to cook it. And we want to come back in just a moment and talk a little bit about your teaching, and then how that translated into your public television and your RFD shows that you did for a while. But we need to take just a real quick break and talk about one of our fine sponsors, and that is Trailhead Supply, your full-service online packing supply store. With their storefront location in Kalispell, Montana, Trailhead Supply doesn't just sell packing supplies. They stand behind every product they sell, and they use them. Trailhead Supply is your online source for the very best in camping gear, horse packing equipment, and horse riding gear. You can shop with Trailhead Supply online today at trailheadsupply.com. And when I was selecting some songs for today's show, I could just imagine being out on the trail, sitting around a campfire, and somebody with some great Dutch oven cooking going on. And so we're going to listen to this one by Don Edwards. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Butch Welch and Tina Mae Weber. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
He was just a Texas cowhand, one that knew his stuff. His eyes was black and his face was tan, and his hands were broad and rough. He was tough as an old buzzsaw. All the boys, they stayed shy. They all knew that his aim was true, he'd shoot at the wink of an eye. Now one night in last spring's roundup, he met with a rustler's band. The flames leaped higher from his old campfire, he fell with a gun in his hand.
Butch, I bet you've sat around some campfires and eaten some good cooking and listened to somebody with a guitar while you've been out.
Oh, yeah, and maybe not so much the guitar music in my case, but I've had the good fortune to spend many a campfire with a couple old boys who could play the harmonica. And to me, harmonica music around the campfire is as good as it gets, but a guitar comes in second place.
Yeah, I'd agree, and our good friend Gary Allegretto would certainly agree, the harmonic cowboy. And, you know, cowboys didn't carry a guitar on the back on their back while they were out riding the trail, but they could put a harmonica in their pocket, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could.
Yeah. Well, let's let's talk a little bit, Butch, about how you went into teaching and then how that translated into these TV shows that you hosted.
Well, this is going back into the late 1990s. I was a game warden stationed in a little town called Grainesville, Idaho, and about 75 miles away, there's a little state college, Lewis and Clark, and another department employee and I began teaching a class for their extension service. When we would meet one night a week, and we had, I think, about 20 people in that first class. And during the course, the folks would work together as a group to prepare a meal. You know, one would do veggies, one meat, bread, dessert, da-da-da. But for the final, each person was going to have to cook a dish on their own. So we're looking at lots of food. And so the local newspaper came up and covered our final and wrote an article about Rod Duke and I's class. And that was happened to be picked up read by the station manager for KWSU at Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, about 30 miles away from Lewiston. And he initially asked me up because of my fish and game background to talk to their fly fishing club and throw in a little bit of Dutch oven cooking. And when that was all said and done, the light went off and Warren's eyes, and he asked me if I would be interested in, you know, trying to do a Dutch oven cooking show. And so that was the summer of 98. My wife and I got married Labor Day weekend, and 1 week later, instead of the 2 weeks annual leave I had off for honeymoon, we spent 1 week getting ready to film the first shows, and the second week filming the shows that actually went on the public television uplink in March of 99, and then really that was just a snowball. Everything started happening. I had written one cookbook, and so that just kind of started the ball rolling for filming another 2 years with public television. My wife and I producing our own series for a year, more books, more appearances. So it's just one of those horses in life that was not charted. It just happened.
Wow. Well, now I got to ask, did you ever take her on that honeymoon?
You know, we haven't made it. Well, we're coming up on 17 years. And no, we never did make the honeymoon, but we've had our fun doing this. And so it's a real team effort. I write the book, she publishes, and so we're a mom and pop business, she's not where she can hear this, but she's an attorney. And of course I was a game warden. The way she puts it, people like us better in our new life rather than our old life. So it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Well, now how did you go from public television into RFD-TV with a series?
RFD actually obtained permission from KWSU to air the first 39 shows we did for public television. And so that was a deal made actually between RFD and public television. And then when we had our own series for 1 year, then we worked a deal out with them, and they showed it for a couple of years.
Oh, wow. 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 Well, you've reached a lot of people through both television, and let's talk a little bit about the books. How many of those, how can people get those books today?
They can go to our website, cdubs.com, and our books are a little bit different than most other Dutch ovens or other cookbooks because there's a combination of stories, from being a game warden, camping stories, along with all the recipes. And each book is a standalone, everything from appetizers to desserts. But there's some good old campfire reading for the Camp Cookie to enjoy while he's sitting back waiting for something to cook. And that's probably what sets our books back. And it was probably the best compliment I ever had as a writer when people began saying, you know, C-Dub, next time you write a book, would you just leave out the recipes?
Oh, gosh. Well, you've got to have good stories around the campfire to go along with the cooking and with the harmonica and the guitar playing. So good stories are always fun to hear and to read. So that is pretty neat. Well, now you've also got another project that's, and before we leave that, where can they buy the books? What's your web address?
Cedubs.com, CEEDUBS.com. If they Google C-Dub, they'll go right to us.
Okay. All right. C-Dub, D-U-B. And you can find the books and you can purchase those. Now, you've also got a new project because you're still teaching and you've got a new project that you're working on that's kind of interesting. Tell us about that internet program you have.
Well, we call it Powerless Cooking. And one of the things we've seen in our generation is people not knowing how to do some things. You know, people of my generation and a lot of city people don't have the opportunity to grow up with a garden or raising their own beef and learning how to take care of themselves. You know, even if you grow one tomato plant on a basket in a pot on your balcony, you've saved a trip to the grocery store. And we just think there are some skill sets out there that will make people more self-reliant. You know, a big ice storm comes in, a natural disaster. You know, most of us have a pretty good camp kit for our recreational cooking, but rather than storing that in your storage shed over winter, keep it in the garage so when the power goes out, you've got the wherewithal that you're not going to need to rely on somebody else just to get fed that day.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the powerlesscooking.com. What's involved in that?
Powerless Cooking is by subscription, and it's online learning modules. Say, and the first one we did was obviously Dutch Oven Cooking 1.0. To show you the generational difference, I was going to call it Dutch Oven Cooking 101, going back to our college. But now it's 1.0, da-da-da. So, and it's just that first learning module is 19 different videos, 6 lessons, and you can follow along on your computer. A lot of us are visual learners, and so
right.
People get to see what I do. They can then go do it themselves, and there is homework, and you don't have to worry about the dog eating the homework unless you have a bad failure. You get to eat your own homework. And so making Dutch oven breads, learning how to the two things that are most important in Dutch oven cooking is time and temperature. All cooking is time and temperature. And then things like learning how to make cheese, making your own homemade sauerkraut, rather than going down and buying a burger, you can go down and buy a chuck roll, cut it up, grind it yourself. You end up with a better, healthier product. And especially on making sausage, you can flavor it the way you want. You can control the fat content, control the salt. So kind of just a way to give people a new outlook, new skills to
yeah.
do things our parents and grandparents took for granted.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's and that is right in line with today's thinking, because people are looking for organic food. They're worried about where their food comes from, how it's been processed. And, you know, there's a big lot of discussion about labeling food content. So if you can do a lot of it yourself and use organically grown, whether it's beef or vegetables, those are skills that are really important, and you're right on top of it. I mean, you and I are about the same age, and you're way ahead of me on this kind of stuff. So, right in step with things.
Well, when I dedicated my fourth book to my mother, she'll be 86 in October, that I call her the trendsetter, because it was everything we had was organic, and we just didn't know it, because, you know, it was clean the farmyard to fertilize the garden, you know, when everything was picked and canned, and, you know, we bought flour at the feed store even in those days, and really, you know, the Indians say life's a circle, and that's, I think, what, you know, we're talking about here. Things do go in a circle, and it's, people are kind of looking backwards now, using that old rearview mirror and saying, what's back there that we can improve today going forward?
Yeah. Well, you're right in step with where that's coming full circle again. So, hey, listen, it's been great to have you on the show and visit with us. We want to let people again know where they can find your books. So give us that address one more time.
CDubs.com. We have a full line of everything you need to cook outdoors.
All right. So that's CEEDUBS.com. And also it's powerlesscooking.com if you want to take that online course. And a lot of folks, that's a lost skill. So it's great that you've got a program like that put together. And then you're also on Facebook. And how can they find you on Facebook?
We have Facebook pages for CW Butch Welch, which is kind of our personal site, but CDubs.com and PowerlessCooking.com. There's a lot of stuff out there.
All right. So people can find everything they need to know about Dutch oven cooking and processing their own foods and taking care of themselves. Well, CW, you've been a great guest. Love talking with you. We'll have to have you back again because we didn't have time to get any recipes in, and I know Tina May had her pad and pencil out ready to do that, so we'll have to have you come back and join us again.
Sounds like a deal.
Absolutely.
I look forward.
All right. Look forward to having you back, and we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Doug Lindgren. We're going to be talking about riding the Black Hills of South Dakota when we visit Hay Creek Ranch on Equestrian Legacy Radio. We'll be right back.
I left my home so long ago, I've rambled near and far. I traded my old boots and spurs for a crying moan guitar. What I lost along the way, the good Lord only knows. But I ain't sold my saddle yet, and while I still got the time to go, I'm singing, Donnie, catch a horse for me, you know, the one that I never could ride. Jake, you snub him up real close, gonna give him another try. Me and Tom will ride the cedar brakes and the wild ones rope and tie. Bonnie Gray, if you're still free, would you be a cowboy's bride? From the Big Horns to Dakota line, where the Belfoose River runs, I rode many a frozen mile, but I had a lot of fun. I ran my first wild horses there, Lord, I've never been the same. I long to see the sun go down on the Thunder Basin Range, a singing. Donnie, catch a horse for me, you know, the one that I never could ride. Jake, you snub him up real close, gonna give him another try. Me and Tom will ride the cedar brakes and the wild ones rope and tie. got a gal that's true to me. She's waited for so long. She wanted nothing more from life than a family and home. First thing in the morning, I'll ride out and see her pa. Then she and I are gonna settle down at the head of a cottonwood draw, singing, Donnie, catch a horse for me, you know the one that I never could ride. Shake your snub him up real close, gonna give him another try. Powder River Tom, let her buck, the Missouri's deep and wide. Bonnie Gray, if you're still free,
is our friend R.W. Hampton and his great song, Donnie Catch a Horse. And, you know, I'm just in the cowboy mood today, Tina May, and we are definitely headed to cowboy country back up in South Dakota in the Black Hills. And we're going to welcome to the show right now Doug Lindgren from Hay Creek Ranch. Doug, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for being on the show, Doug. I've been watching
you
on your webpage, looking at your videos. It's beautiful there.
Oh, yes. We are blessed to live in an awesome place here in the Black Hills. We've had lots and lots of rain here this summer, and everything is just absolutely green and gorgeous.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. Well, you know, we always like to find out a little bit about our guests to start out with. And how you got started into the Hay Creek Ranch. And you've got an interesting story there. Can you share that with us?
Well, this is our 10th year here, and I don't know how that actually happened. As time goes by pretty fast. But we came out, we being my two brothers and our families and my parents and my cousin and his family here in 2001 to camp in the Black Hills here in this Nemo area about 10 years ago. Well, actually, it's been since 2001, so longer than that. And the thing that really kicked that off is I lost a sister in a car accident in 2001, and so that was kind of a wake-up call for me, I think. And anyway, we all planned a vacation to come to the Black Hills and with our horses, and I fell in love with the place. And the horses actually are a critical part of it, because I kind of tell people the only way that they can really get to see the Black Hills is on the back of a horse. So it makes it pretty special, and you get to see things that you won't get to see, you know, on the 55-mile-an-hour out the window of a vehicle type. View of the hills. So.
Right.
Makes
well,
it's
kind of
special.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting because you and your wife both came from different kind of backgrounds back in Iowa, and I think you were telling me that you made several trips out to that area before you made a decision. And
Tell us about that. We came out here, that vacation that one time, and then a year later, my brothers and I came out and did a pack trip for a week out here and had some really good time together. And then Then Jody and I planned our summer vacation back here that same summer, and then again I came back in the fall by myself, and so what I kind of say, spent some quality time with my horse out here. And after about the 2003, we, you know, every time I left here, I felt like I was leaving part of me here. And
wow.
So started kind of thinking about changing careers and trying something new and different. And it's certainly something new and different. I grew up farming and riding horses in my, you know, all my life, and in Northwest Iowa. And Jody was a farm girl from Northwest Iowa. And prior to coming here, we were both in the office setting. She was the office manager for Midco Commodities there in Des Moines, and I was director of producer programs for the Iowa Soybean Association at that time. And so life was pretty good. We had nice retirement plans, a beautiful home, lots of good friends right next door, and you know, kind of everything was all perfect. And then I come out here, and anything, you know, stuff changed, and it's like, okay, we're gonna blow this all up and go do something different and take a chance and see what we could do as far as creating this place called Hay Creek Ranch.
Wow, well, that's pretty
neat.
Wow,
what a leap. There's a big difference between Iowa and South Dakota. What a change.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're up here over a mile high elevation, and we have, you know, the ponderosa pine and the spruce and such, and I traded that for cornfields, and it's been really good.
Yeah, and you
it's
didn't...
It's a richer life, too.
Pardon me?
I said it's a richer life, too, being out there.
Oh, my. It's really fun. You know, I got out here, the property that we bought was just a house and a garage and a whole bunch of trees, and getting away from a desk and such and getting busy, it definitely was a healthy thing for me. I lost 30 pounds, got rid of the cholesterol medication, and the cell phone went in the trash because it doesn't work here. and it's a good thing, you know, and just got busy out here turning the forest into a park, and we got built the campground basically from scratch. We built our own cabins and put in the infrastructure, the water and septic and power and such, and so that was our first year. And then the second year we were open for business here, and it's been awesome ever since. And just steady growth year after year, and we've, you know, it's pretty easy. The product kind of sells itself. People have their horses and they're looking for something to do with those horses, and we've got the, you know, they've got their living quarter trailers, and if they don't, we have cabins for them to rent, and so we just basically provide a really nice place for people to enjoy their horses, and the Black Hills is certainly an awesome place to do that. So
yeah. Now, mm-hmm. Tina May likes to get into details, so I'm sure she wants to ask you about about facilities. Tina May.
Yes, I do, and that is my next question. Tell us about your campground and your facilities and what you have to offer there.
Well, we are in the northern Black Hills, which for those of you that are familiar with where Deadwood is and Spearfish and Sturgis, we're kind of up in that part of the Black Hills, northeast of Rapid City, about 30 miles and about 12 miles from Deadwood. Our property sits in the Black Hills, so we're surrounded by national forest on three sides. We ride out of our gate, and we've got basically 300,000 acres of playground to go ride in, and it empties out into the Black Hills, the national forest. And so we've got trails that we've created over the last 10 years that kind of go out like a spider web from our camp, and got some number over 200 miles of trails that I've mapped on my Garmin. And besides that, then we can just kind of go wherever we want to go on top of those miles that I talked about. So it's really unlimited riding, and every direction from camp gives you something totally different as far as the terrain and the scenery and such. Specifics to camp, we've got campsites that we can accommodate about 25 trailers or thereabouts, maybe a few more. I can get real creative if I have to with power and water. And then we have six cabins that'll sleep from 4 to 6 people. And they'll range from a rustic log cabin that we call the line shack that takes you back about 150 years, if you will. If you stay there, you feel like you're out on the range somewhere. And then the rest of the cabins have water and electric showers, the little kitchens. They're set up basically like little houses, so all you have to bring with you are towels for your showers and whatever stuff you need for yourself. But that gives you an idea. And then we have corrals for our horses, so folks can put the horses in a corral, and if they want to go do their sightseeing around the Black Hills, they can be gone for a day and don't have to be worrying about their stock. There's water at all the pens and such, so they're safe and comfortable while you're out doing your thing. So.
Wow. And kind of tell us a little bit, for people that are not familiar with South Dakota, I've actually rode through the Black Hills, and it's absolutely gorgeous riding there. It's just beautiful. Tell some of our listeners about the terrain, what to expect.
Well, apparently,
you've had some rain. I'm sure you got a lot of water crossings.
Oh, my, yes. Again, we're in the northern Black Hills, and because of that, we're blessed with lots and lots of creeks and water crossings. All the riding that we have has got multiple opportunities for crossing water for your stock as you're riding for the day. We've got one trail that's got 15, 20 water crossings, another one that's got 22 or 23 water crossings. So it makes it lots of fun. The terrain will range, we're over a mile high elevation here at camp. The highest point close to us is Custer Peak, which is 6,800 foot elevation. And so it's mountainous type riding, but it's different in the sense that it's not that big rugged kind of stuff that you might think of when you think of the Rocky Mountains and so on. And because of that, it creates an opportunity for you to really utilize the entire Black Hills without any danger of getting yourself in trouble or getting your horse in trouble. It's pleasant riding. We have everything from open meadows along a pretty creek to heavy trees with ponderosa pine and spruce and aspen. And then you got opportunities for lots of different views from high points in the hills that are nice and open. So you got vistas pretty much every ride that you go on. There will be something that you can see 70, 80 to 100 miles. We've got one view that we can look up through a saddle in the mountain, and we can see the Slim Buttes to the north of us, and that's over 100 miles away. So,
oh, wow.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. That is pretty. What about the wildlife? What are some of the wildlife that you frequently see when you're out riding?
Yep, we've got white-tailed deer. We've got elk here. There's bobcats and mountain lions. We have yet to see a mountain lion. I've been here 10 years, and I know they've seen me. But they're pretty elusive. Yeah. And then, of course, there's, your typical rabbits and squirrels and all the small game. There's coyote around. We see them. Turkey, wild turkey, the Merriam. Turkeys are what we have here. Of course, lots of different birds and what have you out here. So it's mm-hmm. nice. You get to see the wildlife if you're quiet. We get groups going, we've got 10, 15 people that are on a ride, and they're all chattering and having a good time. And it's like, I just don't know why we aren't seeing any elk. Well, you just told them about 20 minutes ago where you are, and they're probably somewhere else now. Yeah.
I remember waking up in South Dakota to a herd of elk that was in a meadow, and it was the most amazing thing. Of course, they didn't stay very long, but it was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
We have them come right through camp, you know, and in the spring of the year especially, they like that fresh grass that we've kept mowed all summer. So they kind of come in and graze on that. And then in the fall here, and then actually within the next few weeks, we'll be hearing those bulls bugling, you know, and that's a neat way to wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. Oh, wow. Well, we want to take just a real quick break and acknowledge one of our sponsors, and that is TrailGuard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance with unlimited vehicle towing to a dealership that services your make vehicle. A second tow vehicle to get your trailer and horses home or to your destination. 24-hour coverage for you and your vehicle or the one that you're driving or anyone driving your vehicle. And a 24-hour personal assistant to help you plan your trip and much, much more. TrailGuard was founded with one mission in mind, and that is guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more today about TrailGuard at trailguard.org. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Doug and with Tina May, and we're also going to find out about Doug's measure of success, and I think you'll be interested in learning how he judges that. But right now, we're going to take a quick break and listen to a great song by Belinda Gale. It's called Along the Navajo Trail, and I'm going to just take this moment to congratulate our own Belinda Gale for her nomination as Female Performer of the Year and Entertainer of the Year for 2015 with the Western Music Association. So we're very proud of Belinda, and you can join her on Sunday morning here on Equestrian Legacy Radio. But right now, let's listen to her great song, Along the Navajo Trail. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Every day along about evening, when the sunlight's beginning to pale, I ride the slumbering shadows along the Navajo Trail. When it's night and the crickets are calling, the coyotes are making a way, smoldering fire along the Navajo Trail. I love to lie and listen to the music of the wind strumming a sagebrush guitar. Over yonder hill the moon is climbing, always finds me wishing on a star. Navajo Trail. It's
the Gales, Along the Navajo Trail. And I was listening to that and thinking, as you and Tina were talking about your facilities there, Doug, have you ever stopped and thought, what am I doing here? Did I make the right decision to leave Iowa?
Oh, I have not looked back. Iowa was a wonderful place. It's been good to me, and that's still, you know, it's my home. But, you know, through life, we get these taps on the shoulder, and this is where I'm supposed to be.
That's great. That is great. Well, you know, as we go through life, we kind of take a look at where we are, and we try to judge our success and our endeavors. And you have a very interesting way of measuring your success. You want to tell us about that?
Well, yeah. You know, the world I came from, we always talked about, and when we were doing our budgets and our business plans and so forth, we needed to have measurables, you know. And it was kind of comical in a sense that we have this measure, and it was brought to my attention actually by a guest that come here from Iowa, and he called me over one morning. We were doing chores, and he said, "You got to come over here for a little bit." He says, "I've got an idea." And I said, "Well, what's that, Howard?" And he says, "Well," he says, "I just want you to talk about how you measure success." And I said, "Well, I guess we could do that." And it just so happened we were standing beside the manure pile. So anyway, I said, "Yeah, I guess we could do that. We could measure success by the size of that manure pile, because when we first started out, this manure pile wasn't very big. And you know what? Today it goes from here to here, and it was taking up a great deal of space in that specific area. So absolutely best way to measure success at a horse camp is to see how big your manure pile is."
I love it.
One
thing about that, it's constant also.
Yeah, there's no shortage of that around a horse camp. So that's
You know, I always kind of tell folks, I think horses are the most efficient animal in the world as far as the way they manage their feed, because you put one bale in and it seems like you always get at least two bales out.
Gosh.
I love it.
Well, so you
that was great. I'm going to have to remember that when I'm cleaning out stalls.
Yeah. There you go. Yep, just go to our website. You'll see our video, and it's there for everybody to see.
I love it. That's
well,
success.
You've done well with Hay Creek Ranch there in South Dakota, but you didn't stop there. So you have Hay Creek Ranch, too, in Arizona. Talk to us a little bit about how you made the decision to do that and a little bit about that facility as well.
Well, you know, when we moved out here to the Black Hills, we came out with the intention that I was going to get to ride horses, and certainly that's what I do, and I get to enjoy our guests while they're here. And we have a neighbor that lives over here just a little ways down the road, and Judy and Leo had home down in Casa Grande, Arizona, and they were after us for about 2 or 3 years to come and visit them, because they'd summer up here and then they'd go down there in Arizona and spend the winter. And it's once again, I finally decided that we needed to take the time and go visit our good friends and neighbors. And we got down there a few years ago in February, I believe it was that year. And we're standing in there at their place, and it's in the 60s and 70s and sunny and beautiful. And it's like, wow, this is winter, you know? And it's like, I think this is a pretty good deal. And so, of course, the wheels started turning, and I thought, riding horses all summer is pretty good, but if I could do it all year round, that'd even be better yet. So
yeah,
we actually started looking for property pretty much right away down there. I'd kind of had that kind of in the back of my mind at one time, and we just ended up getting down there and seeing what it was like and fell in love with it. And we started looking for property and found a really, really nice place down by Oracle, Arizona, which is just northeast of Tucson on the east slope of the Santa Catalina mountain range. And so we got a place purchased, and again, we built another campground basically from scratch there, and this will be our fourth season to be open for business down there, our fourth year to be there, I guess, and third season to be open for business. And we're already looking at basically doubling the size of that camp because the demand is so great. People are coming down there. They're following us from the Black Hills down to Arizona and spending anywhere from a few days to the entire winter with us. And so it's been really good also.
Oh, that's great. We'll talk a little bit about the campground there and the kind of riding that you have, because it's going to be totally different as far as the riding from what you've got in the Black Hills.
Yeah, you know, one of the questions people ask me here that come, you know, to the Black Hills is, what's it like down there in Arizona? I said, well, it's just like here, only different. And when they get down there, they know exactly what I meant by saying that. And it sounds kind of goofy, but it's actually really the truth. The riding we have camp is at 4,600 foot elevation, and we have we set up on a mesa with a 360 degree view of the Santa Catalina mountain range and the Galaro mountain range, and then the San Pedro River Valley in between. And so, that being said, we have riding that goes from the San Pedro River at about 2,000 feet all the way up to the top of Mount Lemmon, which is at 9,000 feet up on the Santa Catalina mountain range.
Oh, wow.
So, ride directly out of our west gate into the Santa Catalinas, and you're in National Forest there with unlimited riding as well. And then if we ride east out of our camp, we go out at the gate, we get to ride on the 3C Ranch, which is about 500 acres, and then that empties out into state land going east down into towards the San Pedro River. And the interesting thing about Arizona for me is, you know, we have a lot of terrain and such, but here in the changes as far as what we ride here in the Black Hills, but the vegetation and the scenery kind of stays pretty constant. When you're in the desert there down in Arizona, you start down at 2,000 foot elevation, and about every couple hundred feet change in elevation, the vegetation and the terrain changes. So it's constantly something different to see and to ride on, and just makes it really, really interesting.
Wow. Wow. Well, I know Tina May's got to ask the question about the facilities and what it's actually like as far as the trail. So, Tina May, just take it away, dear.
Absolutely. Same thing. Let our listeners know what exactly you have at your facilities there in Arizona, and we'll let people have two places to go to.
You bet. Well, our camp sits on a mesa, so we had basically a clean slate of wide open area. And so when I got to create the campground part of it, we made it really easy drive, 100% drive-through, 100% level campsites. The sites are 40 foot wide by 120 foot long, and they have full power, water, and septic as well. So you can park your rig in there and be there for the entire winter without ever having to move your trailer. And when you do get there, it's just easy. All the campsites sit kind of on a herringbone type arrangement, so it makes no square corners. So when you're pulling your living quarter trailer, you don't have to worry about getting around a corner, because it just all smooth transitions when you pull into your site. And then for the horses, we have a barn that we built that is what's kind of identified as a mare motel down in the southwest, which means you have basically an alleyway that's covered, and half of the stall is covered, and then half of the stall is outside or open. And those pens are 12 foot by 24 foot long, and then we have water and feeders and such at each pen, and so it makes a really nice spot for your horse to stay. And then in the middle of that barn, we have a bathroom and coffee room area, and we have room for our hay and such, and some tack. And so there's like four different rooms right in the center of the barn, so everything's handy and makes it really nice and easy to do chores, and also gives us a place to get together, you know, after a ride, and makes it pretty nice there. And then
nice.
Yep. And then the real neat deal is we have facility there that, you know, we wanted to accommodate people, knowing that you come for the winter, those long dark nights go on forever. So we built a structure that we call the Hacienda, and that has bathrooms and showers with tile walls and floors, and laundry facility and a full kitchen, and then a great room in there with a rock fireplace and big screen TV and a place to hang out with, you know, sofa and such to watch your television or just hang out and have a cocktail with your friends. And then outside we have a rock wall patio with a fire pit there in the patio. And so it's turned out to be kind of the place to be, and gives us a place to have our morning coffee, and then we have potlucks and what have you throughout the course of the winter. And anytime there's a birthday or a Super Bowl or whatever, it seems like we have a party going on there. So it creates a pretty fun place.
I bet you do get people that go down there for the winter months.
Oh, yeah. We've got several that are coming, you know, the middle of October and aren't leaving until the 1st of May, you know. And so
I don't blame them.
Yep. It's pretty nice, and there's plenty of riding to do, so you don't, and then also we're not far from, you know, Tucson is about 40 minutes away, and Catalina and Oracle are all close by, and it's just a really, really neat community, and you have access to all the stuff, but you don't have to live in it. We're 8 miles south of Oracle, kind of out in the, people might say we're a long ways from everything, but we're really not, so.
Yeah, that is so cool. That is so cool. Well, tell us a little bit, Doug, about your seasons at both places. So in South Dakota, what are your seasons there?
Well, we come we fire up for business here about mid-May, and then we are wrap things up the end of September. For those that are not familiar with the Black Hills, the temperatures are very, very moderate all season long. We don't have any mosquitoes. We don't have any ticks. We have no bear. There's no wolves. It's kind of one of those places that you kind of pinch yourself every day you get up, because it's
no chiggers.
No chiggers, you know, anything that'll bite you or be mean to you, we just don't allow it here. So anyway, it's a neat place. Low humidity most of the time. This summer's been a little bit different because we have had so much rain, but typically it's real low humidity and pretty pleasant. And you get into the trees, you know, it's another 10 degrees cooler. And because of our elevation, we're 10 to 15 degrees cooler than Rapid City. So if you look at your weather map, you can kind of calculate from there. And then in Arizona, we're there from the 1st of October. It's actually open all year round because we have camp hosts that keep things going for us through the summer. But I'm there, and Jody are there from the 1st of October roughly into about the end of March, 1st of April. So,
wow.
And again, you don't want to come down there during the winter if you don't like 60 and 70 degree days every day and sunshine.
Oh my goodness.
You know, we have you know, once in a great while, we'll have a little snow come down to camp, but it's gone by noon. We can see snow at Mount Lemmon at 9,000 feet, usually from about Thanksgiving through winter. But the best part of that is I can look at that snow and I don't have to scoop a bit of it.
Oh, wow.
You know, the
wow.
one time I was in Arizona, the very one time that I was in Arizona, I went up there, and it was in April. And, of course, I didn't bring any jackets or, you know, coats or anything, and I'll be darned if I don't wake up the ice. Like those guys.
Well, yeah, it all depends on where you were in Arizona, because Arizona's really, really got a lot of variety as far as the terrain and such and elevations.
Well, it was very unusual. I mean, everybody there said that, you know, it was very, very unusual, but leave it to me to bring it with me. So
there you go. There you go. Yeah.
Well, goodness.
I think we squeezed slush out of the garden hose two mornings the last 2 years we were there. So, you know, when we were doing chores, it was slush. It wasn't ice. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And by the time you get chores about half done, if you had a jacket on, you're peeling that off because it's too warm. So.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Well, I guess that manure pile down there is starting to get pretty big, too, after 3 or 4 years there.
Oh, my, yeah. It keeps us busy staying ahead of that one also. It's been really good. And I tell you, the best part of the whole thing is the people. You know, we talk about our horses and riding and all the things that we get to do with our horses, but at the end of the day, it's still the best part's the people that come.
Right. Well, I tell you what, I can tell that Tina May's bucket list has grown. Mine has as well. And when you have some of these Tennessee winters, Arizona sounds pretty stinking good to me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We can understand that. I grew up in the Midwest, so, you know, and when that cold bites those fingers and you don't even think about it. When I talked about Arizona, I was here this summer. Well, it was actually I was here this winter. Winter doesn't calculate when you're looking at 60s and 70s every day.
Oh, gosh, that's great. Well, Doug, you've been a great guest. We want to tell folks where they can find you, so give us your website, and you're also on Facebook, so give us the information for both of those.
You bet. If you go to your website, Hay Creek Ranch, all one word, and .net, haycreekranch.net, will get you to our website, and you can go to either our Arizona location or South Dakota location from that site. And then our contact information is there. Our email is contact@haycreekranch.net also. So you can find us there.
And your Facebook page is what?
It's also Hay Creek Ranch. So just go right there. Jody actually takes care of all that, so I'm about as green as a gourd when I talk about Facebook. Anyway, we're there, and there's a lot of good information there, and it's fun. Another place you can find me is I write an article for Horse Digest and once a month, and you can find us in there also. So.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, there's a great on your website. There's a great story that I think you wrote about how you ended up in South Dakota, and great information on the website, great pictures, and great pictures on Facebook, and information as well too. So, my bucket list has grown. I'm seriously thinking that Arizona is a place to be during the winter time.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Well, Doug, thanks. Thanks for sharing your time with us today and telling our audience about Hay Creek Ranch. And again, visit their website, haycreekranch.net, and their Facebook page. We all like to be liked on Facebook, so be sure and go by and like their page there and keep up with things. And Doug, thank you again for being with us today.
Well, it's absolutely
my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
All right, and when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Tina May Weber. We've got a big announcement because this is the end of the month, and we have a Legacy Club winner that we're going to announce. So we'll be right back to do that and wrap things up with Tina May. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
chores are over at our ranch house on the plains, and all I've got to do is lay around. I saddle up my pony and I ride off down the trail to watch the desert sun go down. Riding down the canyon to watch the sun go down, a picture that no artist ever could paint. White-faced cattle lowing on the mountainside, I hear a coyote whining for his mate. Cactus plants are blooming, sagebrush everywhere, granite spires standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down. The sun go down, a picture that no artist ever could paint. White-faced cattle lowing up on the mountainside, I hear a coyote whining for his mate. Cactus plants are blooming, sagebrush everywhere, granite spires standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down.
Well, that's Ian Tyson riding down the canyon, and we remind you that Saddle Up America is sponsored by our two great sponsors, Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance, founded with one mission in mind, and Trail Guard guards you down life's trails. You can learn more about Trail Guard today at trailguard.org, and by Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. You can visit with them and shop today at trailheadsupply.com. And by the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the Western and equestrian lifestyle, in the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. And Tina May, it's time to tell folks about the Legacy Club and who our monthly winner is today.
Absolutely. Our Legacy Club is free. The Legacy Club offers great discounts to our members from our Legacy Club sponsors, Select Campgrounds, Dude Ranches, and even Western Adventures. As a Legacy Club member, you are automatically entered into our drawings for free prizes, like our end-of-the-year prize of a two-horse Hydro Horse system from our premier sponsor, Hydro Horse, and our monthly prize drawing, like this month's $100 gift certificate from our select sponsor, Tucker Tack. You can sign up to be a Legacy Club member at equestrianlegacy.net. Are you going to let me tell this month's winner?
I guess it's time to announce the winner.
Okay, where's my drum roll?
Well, it's way back somewhere else, so we'll just have to...
Okay, that was so cool. This month's Legacy Club winner for a $100 gift certificate from Tucker Tech is Garrett Band from the Netherlands. Congratulations, Garrett.
All right, so we have a worldwide audience, and we have Legacy Club members from around the globe as well, so congratulations to Garrett Band in the Netherlands. And thank you to Tucker Tack for supporting Legacy Club and providing that great monthly gift certificate of $100. So anyway, Tina May, I think I've had fun during this show. I mean, it's been a good one.
Very informative.
Yeah. So we're going to have to get Butch back on here. CW is going to have to share some recipes with us and some of his stories from the trail. But, we didn't get to talk enough
about
that.
Now we got two good places to go visit.
Yeah. So Doug was a great guest, and you know, he's kind of living, I think, a lot of people's dreams. He's got a great facility back up in the Black Hills there in South Dakota, and then Hay Creek Ranch number 2 down in Arizona, and both great facilities, great people that operate those, and good places to visit. So anyway, let's tell folks who we have joining us next Tuesday on Saddle Up America.
Well, next Tuesday we have Backcountry Horsemen of America. Then we travel to Estes Park, Colorado, and talk with Cody Walker at Sombrero Ranches Incorporated.
All right. So Colorado is always a great riding destination. We look forward to talking and visiting with that guest ranch, and then we enjoy every month with Backcountry Horsemen of America, and Jim McGarvey, I guess, will be with us then, so we look forward to that show. This Thursday on the Campfire Cafe at noon, we'll be talking with Larry Wilder in Oregon, and he is a multi-talented musician and singer, and we look forward to that show with him. And then Jeff Sims with Trail Guard is going to be joining us. So we'll find out a little bit more about Trail Guard and how that got started and the benefits of their roadside assistance program. And then on Sunday morning, we have Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale at 9 o'clock. And she has a great guest, Andy Nelson, that will be joining her. So we've got some great shows that are lined up, and a lot of great information, and always a lot of great music and great guests to talk with. So we want to remind our listeners, as always, if you climb in the saddle,
get ready for the ride.
Get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. And we'll close the show today with a great song by Bryn Hill called You Cowboy. And again, we thank you for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Save some lucky men to be cowboys, 'cause no ordinary man can wear the name. Hearts of gold and hands of leather, and that restless spirit no one will ever tame. Branded by the land, befriended by the wind, you may never pass this way again. But something in the wind is saying that your time is now, boy. And your daddy calls you a drifter, I call you cowboy. Thank you. That voice of freedom is calling you down the line. And you don't know where you're going, but you know what you leave behind. So you're saddling up now to chase your dreams, to show yourself and the world what freedom really means. You've been branded by the land, befriended by the wind. You may never pass this way again, but something in the wind is saying that your time is now, boy. And your daddy calls you a drifter, I call you cowboy. She's got eyes as blue as the sky. Whoever said cowboys don't cry? It's just something deep inside saying your time is now, boy. And your daddy calls you a drifter, I call you cowboy. Yeah, your daddy calls you a drifter, I call you friend, I call you cowboy, I call you cowboy. Well, I call you cowboy.